Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Austin Seibert, and it's over. 7 for 7. Hail to the kicker.
Yeah. Austin Seibert's 7th field goal of the game, walk-off game winner, a strange game yesterday at the newly named Northwest Field, but you take it and run with it if you're the home team. Washington 21, the hard way, the Giants 18. Good morning. My game take coming up in the next segment where I've got a complete recap of the Commanders' first win since November 5th, remember, of last year. That's when they went to Foxborough and beat the Patriots 20-17. Don't forget, this team had lost 9 games in a row, including the last 8 of last year and the road opener last week in Tampa Bay. They also beat the Giants for the first time yesterday since the 2021 season. So soak it up, Washington fans. Winning has been elusive around here. 1-1 with the most important headline or takeaway being that their rookie quarterback is playing well so far. That is worth a huge smile and really a big exhale. I know it's early. It's just 2 games, of course. But just the idea that through 2 games, there is real reason to be optimistic. That is really, like we talked about all offseason, the number one goal of this season was to find out if Jaden Daniels was worth the number 2 overall pick in the draft. I hate even saying this because I have fear of jinxing it. But so far, so good. And yesterday was really good. You know, beyond the quarterback, there were a lot of good things to pull from that odd game yesterday. Brian Robinson Jr. had the best day of his career. Austin Eckler looks like the Austin Eckler from a few years ago. They may have found a second receiver, and at least for the next week, they don't have to sweat it out when it comes to who their kicker is. But this win was far from perfect. There's a lot to clean up. It's actually the perfect scenario for a head coach. You can point to a litany of mistakes, but you're able to do it after a win. You know, Dan Quinn has talked about tell the truth Mondays. He'll have plenty to talk about, he and his staff will, today. But it's so much easier to do after a win than it is a loss. And let's face it, the number one reason Washington won the game yesterday was the Giants lost their kicker on the first play of the game. Losing Graham Gano on the opening kickoff meant the Giants had no ability to kick for points, PATs or field goals, neither. They tried it once with their punter. It didn't work, so they didn't give him another shot. 3 touchdowns for the Giants and the minimum amount of points with 3 touchdowns, 18. They were forced to go for a 4th and 4 in a tie game with just over 2 minutes to go instead of being able to kick a chip shot field goal that would have given them a 3-point lead. You know, one of the best players on the field yesterday, Malik Nabers. Oh, my God, Denton. I mean, seriously. You know, sometimes I think, and I've talked about this a lot in recent years, you have as well, we get wrapped up, and a lot of you get wrapped up just in our games. And I don't want to bring Terry into the conversation, but he's been brought into the conversation at all a lot over the years. That's what a number one elite receiver looks like. Number one on the New York Football Giants, Malik Nabers. It's only 2 games, but Jaden Daniels' teammate at LSU was a monster in the game, albeit against a secondary that is having issues. With that said, you know, the losing of Graham Gano and then his drop on a 4th and 4 that they had to go for because they didn't have a kicker, those things added up to really the most significant events of the day in terms of yesterday's game. The big picture significant event of the first 2 weeks is the quarterback has given us reason early on to be optimistic. But Giants coach Brian Daboll has a lot to answer for because Gano was hurt heading into the game. Gano was added to the injury report after their walkthrough on Saturday, but Daboll chose not to activate a rookie kicker that they have on the practice squad, at the very least to handle kickoffs. In hindsight, a poor decision that probably cost the Giants the game. But you know what? That's not our problem. Although through 2 weeks, we do appear to have a problem. It's just 2 weeks and things change. I get it. And I'm not about to make any kind of referendum or sweeping conclusion after 2 games. But the revamped defense, the performance through 2 games, kind of alarming. They gave up 2 scores on 3 drives in the first half yesterday, which meant through the first game and a half, the first 6 quarters of the season, Tampa Bay and the Giants had combined for 9 scores on 11 opportunities against Washington's defense. 6 of those scores, touchdowns. That's not good. Last week, they couldn't cover anybody. This week, the same, but they also got run on to the tune of nearly 6 yards per carry. If you didn't know any better, and I said this last week, you'd think this was last year's defense. Through 2 weeks of the season, Washington is dead last in the league in third down defense, dead last in opposing QB passer rating, tied for dead last with just 2 sacks, and near the bottom of the league in yards per pass attempt against. Now, they made a few plays yesterday, none bigger than the punch-out forced fumble by Benjamin St. Juice on the opening drive of the second half. I mean, the Giants were on the move again and likely on the verge of potentially making it a 2-score game. So that was a monster play, and it was a forced fumble. Hell of a play by number 25, St. Juice. And really the best play and one of the only really good plays the defense has made in 2 games. But wow, hard to fathom how bad the results have been defensively. And please, talk me out of talking myself into things like win rates and PFF numbers on anything defensively this week. The Giants had no kicker, the Skins knew it, and New York still went 3-for-3 in the red zone. It's early, though, you know, and I do get the fact that nearly 2/3 of the contributing defensive players are brand new along with the coaching staff. So it takes time, but the Giants offense, man, specifically their quarterback, came into Landover yesterday on the verge of a mental breakdown, and they left the building thanking the Skins for a life preserver, at least here early in the season. The defense through 2 games, oh my, OMG. But how about that Jaden Daniels? I mean, there is so much about him through two games that has been so encouraging. And that's so much more important than anything else right now. And it would be pretty hard for anybody at this point to feel anything but optimistic about his start to the season. If you want to say that you're concerned about him staying healthy with the way he plays, that's not unreasonable, but fair warning, he's not going to change the way he plays anytime soon. His playmaking ability is one of the top two or three reasons you drafted him, and for now, as a young player on a team that needs him to make plays, he's going to keep making plays. And a few of them are going to end with him getting hit. It's called football. But as you saw yesterday, you know, his legs are not his only asset. He can really sling it. You know, on that final drive needing field goal range, that throw he made to Noah Brown on 2nd and 10 after the 2-minute warning should shut up the people that barely watched him in college and instead read a PFF summary that said he can't throw the ball over the middle. Versus the blitz, absolutely needing it on 2nd and 10, he dropped one in the bucket over the middle to Noah Brown in stride for 34 yards. Few plays later, they're in field goal range to kick a game winner. Chip shot range, especially after that read option keeper for 14 yards to get it even closer for Austin Seibert. His first chance for a game-winning drive, A+. So much more coming up on his game, and plenty on the help he got, especially from, I think at this point, early in the season, one of the best 1-2 running back punch, you know, tandems in the NFL. 21-18, 7 field goals, no touchdowns for the winning team. How about this one? The Giants became the first team in NFL history to lose a game in regulation when scoring 3 touchdowns or more without giving up a touchdown. 1-1 with a Monday night game next week in Cincinnati. My game take coming up, but let's get to Denton. Let's get to a quick what do you got?
All right.
What do you got?
So yesterday was a phenomenal NFL Sunday. 11 of the 14 games decided by 7 or fewer points. And, of course, you had some incredible, shocking results. Let's start with the fact that the biggest favorite on the board for the 2nd consecutive week to start the season lost outright. Yes, the Baltimore Ravens lost outright as a 9-point favorite over the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, that line was 9.5, came down to 8 at one point, then went back to 8.5, 9. But last week, it was the Bengals as the biggest favorite on the board, losing to the Patriots. This week, it was the Ravens, the biggest favorite on the board, losing to the Raiders. These survivor pools, Denton, after 2 weeks, have lost more than half of their participants on average across the board. Not to mention the fact that other teams like the Lions, who went off as 8-point favorites against a very injured Tampa Bay team. You know, Tampa lost a few key players on defense after their season opening win over Washington. They were probably the Lions, the 2nd biggest survivor pool pick. They lost outright. You also had a lot of people on the 49ers. You had a lot of people on Jacksonville. And you had a lot of people on the Cowboys. They all lost. The NFL is, it just never, ever disappoints. It is so unpredictable week to week. Who had the Saints scoring 91 points in the first 2 weeks of the season? I want to make one quick point about the Saints' start to the season. I didn't look this up. I haven't read this. This is just, I think I might be right on this. I might be wrong, too. It seems to me that teams that start the season on fire offensively end up being legit for the year. Teams that start off being lights out defensively tend not to necessarily have that translate to the final, 15 games. The Saints scoring 47 against a terrible team last week, but then coming back and scoring 44, 35 in the first half. 35 in the first half against the Cowboys on the road. Maybe a warning to the rest of the league that they are legit. You know, we had Aaron Schatz, the creator of the DVOA metric. I love Aaron. I have followed his work over the years. I reference it a lot. We had him on, I don't know, Denton, Tuesday or Wednesday before the first Sunday last week. And I said, give me a team that you think right now is going to overperform what most people think. And he immediately said the Saints. Immediately said the Saints. He goes, everything about their team creates a much better DVOA profile than people have in just their regular season predictions. But the NFL was great yesterday. Got another one tonight, and A.J. Brown is out of that game in Philly. I promised on Friday that I would wait until today to give you a Monday night smell test pick. I really like the Falcons. I should have given them out on Friday when the line was 6.5 and bought it to 7. Denton, it's now down to 5.5, so I'm going to pass on tonight's game simply because it's a bad number at this point. The public is backing Philly, but with A.J. Brown out, a little bit less of a public side. The smell test was horrible on Saturday. Thanks to all of you who let me know how terrible it was. You're the same people that never, never reach out to me when I have a lights out Saturday or Sunday. I did bounce back yesterday, 5-1-1. So the smell test for the weekend, 5-5-1 after an 0-3 Saturday, lost the game on Thursday night, but 5-1-1 with the only loser yesterday being the Giants. I had them plus the 1.5. You know, I actually, when the Giants scored to go up 18-15 and they went for the two, if they had made that 2-point conversion to get to 20-15, then Washington would have likely been in a situation where they would have maybe gone for it and then scored a touchdown, hopefully missed the 2-point conversion, and I would have had my 1-point win. But they didn't make the 2-point conversion, and the game stayed at 3 at that point. And then the only thing I was rooting for was for the burgundy and gold to get through, no matter what it meant to the wager I had made. But 5-1-1 yesterday on a wild NFL Sunday. I mean, 11 of the 14 games decided by a touchdown or less, and one upset after another. Another good one tonight and next week already. You know, Denton, have you looked ahead to next week? I mean, you got some really interesting games. Texans at Minnesota. How about the Eagles at the Saints? By the way, do you know that the Eagles are favored in New Orleans next week after what the Saints have done in the first 2 weeks? You've got Dolphins, Seahawks. We'll see about the quarterback. Ravens, Cowboys, 49ers against the 0-2 Rams, who got absolutely blitzed by the Cardinals. Speaking of the Cardinals, they host the Lions. The Chiefs are in Atlanta next Sunday night, and then next week you get a doubleheader on Monday Night Football, which includes Washington at Cincinnati. The Bengals lost. I mean, how good was that game for week 2? Chiefs-Bengals. So good. I know you had to be hurting. Real quickly, because we're going to do an around the NFL segment a little later on in the show. Interference or not?
I thought it was a little ticky-tacky. I mean, I guess he got there early. I don't know that he got there early in real time, though, so I wasn't thrilled with how the ref called that.
I thought it was interference. The only thing that I would say is he was making a play on the ball, but he had to go through the receiver to get there, and it was early.
I mean, that wasn't the bad. The bad penalty was whatever the hell Ja'Marr Chase was on. I mean, that was a stupid penalty.
God, that was so hurtful. They ended up making that field goal, but he killed their chances for a touchdown.
I mean, because they were moving the ball. I was like, guy, what are you doing? And then I was a little upset because, like, CBS didn't show the replay at first of, like, what he was yelling about. So I wanted to see, like, was he justified? And then they showed the replay after the commercial, and I was like, he got a 15-yard flag over that? It was bad. That was really bad.
Oh, you didn't like the call. I thought you were talking about the behavior.
No. So I wanted to see what he was mad about. Like, was he justified in what he was yelling about?
Oh,
and then
no,
they showed it, and I was like, that's what you were yelling about? Like,
exactly.
It was just a normal face mask. That was bad. I could not believe that he did that.
Good. I thought you were going to tell me that you didn't think he should be flagged. He went after that referee multiple times.
He was going after him for like 2 minutes. He just didn't stop.
You know, next week, right now, the Bengals 7.5 favorites, depending on where you're looking. They're 0-2, and they desperately need one. But, you know, it feels so much better that Washington's going in there off of this win. By the way, you know, we talk about this all the time when it comes to the NFL schedule. Like, you just don't know, you know. And I think a lot of people said, okay, well, it is a short turnaround going to Arizona in week 4, but it's Arizona. Yeah, the Cardinals have put up 28 and 41 in their first 2 weeks. And the defense for our team appears to be an issue. But you know what? That's 2 games down the road. We have yesterday to bathe ourselves in. It was an odd game, but there was a lot good that came out of it, especially offensively. My game take when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also downloadable on the Odyssey app where you can listen to us wherever and whenever you want. All morning long, our coverage of Washington's 21-18 win over the Giants and everything else from this football weekend is presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile, and you can get tons of benefits and still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Kevin's take. The good, the bad, and the ugly from yesterday's Washington Commanders game.
Let's go! Let's go!
Here's Kevin.
Austin Ekeler, one of the new additions, and Jeremy Nichols, the running back. Game 2 is happening in Washington. It's Ekeler. Straight ahead, Austin Ekeler. There's a flag down, and he's out running Goodell. But that flag is back inside the 40 of Washington as he is into the end zone for an opening kickoff for a touchdown.
Yeah, it looked good to start. It certainly felt like, look out, here we go. Unfortunately, that was returned thanks to a Nick Ballore hold, one of the 2 penalties that he had on special teams in his first game. That was the only time we had an offensive player in the end zone with the ball in his hands all day. That was a special teams return, not an offensive player. Only time with the football for anybody in the end zone, the scoring end zone, not your own end zone, all day long. You know, Eckler's been really good so far this season. Unfortunately, that was called back. A 21-18 win over the Giants. The 21 points, not the normal way, of three touchdowns and three PATs, seven field goals by new kicker Austin Seibert, who, get this, is represented, his agent is Dave Butts Jr. Yes, that Dave Butts, his son, number 65, one of the greatest to ever do it along the D-line for the Burgundy and Gold. Some of you who play golf occasionally refer to a bogey on a par five where you're getting a shot as a Dave Butts, as in a 6-5. That probably sailed over the heads of many of you, but a few of you got it, so that's fine. I was reading in David Aldridge's column on Austin Seibert's debut. I had no idea, but he detailed the fact that Austin's grandfather and Dave Butts' father, or Butts Jr.'s grandfather, they grew up on the same street in Bellevue, Illinois, and they've been family friends, and Austin Seibert uses Dave Butts' son, Dave Butts Jr., as his agent. You know who Dave Butts' best friend on the team was during his days and who he rode to every single game with? The kicker, Mark Moseley. Great day by Seibert. His sixth field goal was actually the one that set the franchise record for made field goals in a game. No Skins kicker had ever kicked more than five in a game. It was the first time since 2009 yesterday that Washington won a game without scoring a touchdown. They beat the Rams 9-7 in week two back in 2009 during, of course, the storied Jim Zorn era. I'll never forget that game because Tommy and I were doing the Jim Zorn weekly show. We were in our studio out at Redskins Park. Jim Zorn walked in, and one of my questions was about whether or not he was concerned about his job after they had won a game. And he looked at me like he wanted to kill me, and I explained to him afterwards. I said, we've been around here for a while. We understand that the way it looked yesterday, despite it being a win, and the way it started the week before, and the rumors were already swirling about him. But anyway, all right, let's get to the game take. What I liked, what I didn't like, a few other observations from the game, then your chance, which will come right around 11 a.m. So you don't have to start lining up on the phones now. I know some of you are there, but we'll start taking calls in the 11 a.m. hour. Ben Standig will be with us at 12, and we'll go around the NFL a little bit later on in the program. All right, what I liked. Number one on the list is no kicker for the Giants. I mean, come on. Brian Daboll deserves everything that's coming his way in New York today, from sports talk hosts, from columnists, the whole thing. Graham Gano wasn't 100% heading into the game. This is the key issue if you're a Giant fan and you look at this, and as a fan of our team, it was critical that incompetence took over, because Graham Gano was a late add to the injury report on Saturday with a groin issue. They decided not to activate the kicker that they've got on the practice squad, which was mistake number one. Mistake number two was not using their punter once they decided not to activate the other kicker to handle kickoffs once they didn't bring the practice kicker up. Gano, during pregame warmups, had to go back into the locker room. He was reporting discomfort, and they had to wrap his groin. And then they put him out there to kick the ball off anyway. They had plenty of time to do something before yesterday, on Saturday, knowing what they knew about Gano's condition on Saturday. And once they didn't do that, they didn't even save themselves by having a contingency plan with the punter kicking off, at least. Maybe the punter couldn't kick off, But my God, you talk about incompetence. Like, it's bad luck if a healthy kicker gets hurt in a game. It's incompetence if you don't have a contingency plan for an unhealthy kicker. That massive mistake by the Giants head coach and/or special teams coach was the number one determining factor in the game. Thank you, Brian Daboll. Number two on the list, Jaden Daniels. I mean, this. I'm going to get through this. It's going to take a little bit of time, but I mean, there was so much to his performance. Let me not bury the lead. I gave him an A for yesterday. A B last week. I give him an A for yesterday. And let me preface what I'm going to say. There are plays that he had that he could have made, and more of them will be revealed, you know, by the All 22. And, you know, my non-expert opinion will be in play tomorrow. I'm sure along with all of the non-players that are out there doing film breakdown, I'm sure you can take those to the bank. But I would guess, and I'm going to give you a few plays, hunches on a few plays that maybe he should have let it fly, that there were some plays that were there to be made that he didn't make. You can say that, by the way, every week about almost every quarterback. But I'll save that for the back half of this Jaden Daniels evaluation. I want to start with the positives because they way outnumber the negatives. I'll start with this. He's so poised. He's so calm. He's so in control. He appears to be totally comfortable already playing quarterback at the NFL level. Nothing appears to be too big for him right now. That could change, okay? I don't think his demeanor for 226 yards, no interceptions, that's key. No interceptions, no turnovers through the first 2 weeks. He nearly had one last week on the sack fumble, but Tyler Biadasz jumped on it. 7.8 yards per pass attempt yesterday. That's pretty damn good. He took 5 sacks. I don't know how many of them were on him. I've got some thoughts on those 5 coming up in a few minutes. But here's the good news on those sacks. This is something Denton and I talked about all offseason when people were highlighting his pressure to sack percentage as a major, major problem, along with his inability to throw across the middle, which you saw yesterday when it mattered most. Is 5 sacks, but just 21 yards of lost yardage. And this was really important and something we highlighted during the offseason at LSU. He had the lowest lost yardage average on sacks of any of the quarterbacks that were projected to go in the first round. The average yards lost on sacks yesterday, just over 4 yards, barely over 4 yards. He just does an excellent job of escaping big lost yardage plays and working his way with his mobility back towards the line of scrimmage. You know, I do, again, wonder how many of the 5 sacks he could have unloaded the ball, because I think it's at least 2 of them. But the lost yardage is a good sign on those sacks. You know, sacks and penalties are the biggest drive killers. But usually after a sack or a penalty, just go back to last year, you end up with, you know, 2nd and 18, 2nd and 16, 2nd and 20, you know, 3rd and 19. It doesn't happen that much with him because now penalties you can't control, and there were too many of those. His best plays, in my opinion, let's first go through some of the throws. I loved some of the RPO decisions and some of the throws off the RPO. RPO, remember, read pass option, run pass option, not read option. Run pass option is when he's either leaving it in the gut of the runner or he's quickly throwing it outside, typically, to a receiver. Linemen can't be more than a yard downfield. They got caught for it on one of the RPOs. So the release, the decision's got to be super quick, and then the release has to be out super quick. 3rd and 1, opening drive, part of that long opening drive, the right decision because they were playing soft on Dami Brown, and he gets it out quickly. It's a 5-yard completion, moves the sticks. He had some really good decisions not to throw on some of the RPO stuff and instead give the ball to the back. This is, you know, this is 101 in college football, you know, RPO football. He's very comfortable. He sees it, and he's got such a quick release, and he can really throw accurately that they're effective in some of that, and they were yesterday. I loved the throw after he got the wind knocked out of him, a play we'll talk about. How about coming back in after the one play that Jeff Driskel was in on, and he throws an in-timing slant to Terry McLaurin, fit it perfectly between the corner and the dropping linebacker. Loved the throw to Noah Brown in the fourth quarter, not the big one on the final drive, but the play-action slant for 15 yards. Go watch that play. Super quick processing. He goes left to center to right and then hits Brown, who goes to the ground with the catch. I actually thought it was thrown well enough. You know, maybe I'll see something differently. I thought it was thrown well enough for him to catch it in stride and maybe score. The perfectly designed Kingsbury play on the final drive, on the next to last drive, excuse me, the next to last drive, where he rolls out right and then throws back to Eckler for a big 27-yard play that got him down to the 6-yard line. Love that play, but the throw has to be really well thrown, led perfectly, have some zip on it so Eckler can take advantage with the run after catch of the defense chasing after the quarterback on the pocket moving right. And then that final throw to Noah Brown on 2nd and 10, you know, after Brian Robinson got stacked up at the line of scrimmage, that was following the 4th and 4 neighbors drop. It's a big play in the game, you know, and it's 34 yards, and it's just, it's a perfect throw. And again, you know, I think a lot of the criticism, he can't throw over the middle. He doesn't want to throw over the middle. We talked about some of the reasons why. They were such a prolific first and second down offense at LSU. They just didn't have a lot of those 3rd and 5s, 3rd and 6s where you end up throwing over the middle. So we always thought in discussing that there was a bit misleading. And if you watched him last year, you know he can stand in the pocket and throw the ball over the middle. And that throw to Brown on the last drive was massive. How about some of his runs? The 3rd and 10 scramble for 9.5 yards that set up the 4th and 1. He was decisive with pressure. That was, which drive was that? That was the opening drive. You know, it's 3rd and 10. He's, you know, the pressure comes. He immediately is decisive, gets downfield, then cuts it back and nearly gets the first down. Actually, they ruled it a first down, and then the challenge was on the spot, and the Giants won that challenge. How about the scramble where he took off, where he took the shot and got the wind knocked out of him? That's 3rd and 13, people. He's not going to protect himself as much in those spots. When he is trying to move the sticks on 3rd and 13, it's called football. He got the first down with a 14-yard scramble. I love that play. A 1st and 15 late in the first half. He escapes and runs for 9 yards, gets out of bounds. That was such great feel in the pocket. He avoided a sack in the third quarter by escaping pressure and getting back to the line of scrimmage. That would have been typical of a play last year at LSU. If he had lost a yard, it would have actually, you know, been called a sack, but he got it back to the line of scrimmage. Again, incredible feel in the pocket on that one. And then that read option keeper on the final drive. You didn't see as many read option keepers. You saw read option, but you saw more runs. And a lot of that is the 3-4 base defense, and we talked about that on Friday. But that last one, they actually blocked up really well too. Got out of bounds, got a first down. Had no problem, by the way, with him going out of bounds there at the end because he got in a first down. So, you know, the effort to stay inbounds to force another timeout or to keep the clock rolling isn't as important when you're going and you get the first down by tightroping that, you know, sideline and then protecting yourself at the end. So there are a couple of other things that, you know, and I do want to get to some of the negatives with him from my standpoint. First of all, I think he seems totally in control at the line of scrimmage. There's a 3rd and 14 on that opening drive where he checks to an Eckler run against a light box. You could tell that that was a check. It's 3rd and 13. They probably have, you know, hey, we're going to throw it towards the end zone, try to get a first down or try to get a touchdown if they're coming after you. But if it's a light box and they're playing conservatively, we're going to check to Eckler. He got 13 yards on that run, and they had a 4th and 1. They were going to go for it before that first of many red zone penalties on the day. I love that. I thought he looked in total control at the line of scrimmage. There are a couple of things. Okay, first of all, just the sacks real quickly before I've had a chance, you know, and I say I've had a chance. I mean, I'll look at the All-22 today. I actually can't wait to watch it for the sacks. Hardly an expert opinion. But, you know, some of you guys, too, you can pick up on certain things. But I also would love to hear, you know, Quinn talk about maybe some of them today. But I thought that the first one, there were two of them, there were 4 of them in the first half, 1 in the second half. And I thought the first one where he lost 3 yards, McFadden's blitzing, I don't think he picked up the blitz there. I don't think he saw it. I don't think he read the blitz. He escaped and got away from McFadden and others and turned it into a 3-yard loss when it could have been much bigger. That's something he does. But I have a feeling that that was not, you know, that may have been on him. He also had a 5-yard sack. Not sure if it was like a quick screen. I don't know why he didn't throw it. It was they were on the move. It was their second drive, I believe, and he took he scrambled out of getting sacked, but still lost 5 yards when he got tackled on the sideline. It looked like a screen setup, and it looked like it was kind of there, but he just decided not to throw it. And then I think he was in trouble because you probably had linemen down the field on the quick bubble. I thought the biggest loss, the biggest sack of the day, the 3rd and 6, where he lost 7 on their second drive, I thought that he could have thrown the football. I also thought the O-line got beat quickly, but I thought the ball had a chance to come out to at least the receiver that was running kind of a dig on the left sideline, and I forget who that was. He had Wiley got beat on the second half sack pretty quickly, so I thought that that was more O-line. But there was one other thing that I just wanted to point out as just, you know, a constructive critique. I said last week on the play in which he fumbled after being sacked on that 3rd quarter drive that he backed up in the pocket. He backed himself into a sack instead of stepping up. I have noticed, even yesterday, there are just a couple of times, and even on positive plays and positive throws, I think there are more opportunity, and even just a tiny, you know, sort of fading back a little bit. I would bet that that's something that they're working with him on. It was not an issue. I think he's perhaps waiting maybe a little bit for receivers to get open. But if you notice on a lot of the throws, even some that he completed, there's not a true step up into a pocket that's been created. So just a very small nit to pick. But I noticed it last week when he stepped out of the pocket, stepped backwards. You'd never want that. You know, your offensive tackles are, you know, they've got a certain depth, which they're blocking, you know, Wiley's trying to block Thibodeau, as an example, too. If that quarterback steps beyond that depth, it's on the quarterback. So that would be... that would just be one small nit to pick. Overall, though, my God, come on, man. His playmaking ability, his arm, his decision-making, the final drive, a performance for the quarterback. All right, other things that I liked from the game yesterday. How about 7 for 7 on drives? I know, no touchdowns, but no punts in the game. The red zone failures aren't good. You're not going to probably win the games by going 0 for 6 in the red zone. But still, no punts in a game? 7 of 14 on third down, 1 for 1 on fourth down? You'll take that kind of between-the-20s production every single week. The first drive in particular, a beauty. Now, they got helped out like they did last week on their first scoring drive. There was a 3rd-and-9 defensive hold against Ertz. It was a good call. But that first drive, 16 plays, 64 yards, 9 minutes and 36 seconds elapsed. You'd like it to end in touchdown, but still, when you hold on to the ball to start the game for 9 minutes and 36 seconds, and you keep the opposing defense on a warm day on the field for 16 plays, it was a harbinger of things to come. Washington, 37 minutes, 22 seconds to 22 minutes, 28 seconds in time of possession. 22:38, I guess. That was really important in the win. 425 total yards of offense, 6.2 yards per play. Yes, we'll take that every week. They rushed the ball for 215 yards. Credit to the quarterback. Credit to the two running backs. And yes, credit to the offensive line. They're physical in the run game. They were yesterday. And that defense is talented, especially in their front seven. But make no mistake about what they're going to be as a rush offense, I think, a lot of Sundays this year. The quarterback being dual threat, being able to present himself as a potential runner on any down, is a game changer for any offense, especially when the quarterback is as much of a threat as Jaden Daniels is. Everybody benefits from his ability to be a runner or presented as a runner on every play, and kudos to the coordinator for leveraging that threat. I give Kingsbury kudos yesterday. Quick game early, got Jaden into it, got his best players touches early in the game, Terry and Robinson Jr. on the first two plays, even though they weren't super productive. Again, the lethal rush offense. I loved the multiple formations, lots of quarterback, you know, positioning, under center, shotgun, pistol. The motion, you know, seemed like a bit more, but I'd have to go back and watch it again. I loved some of the play designs, especially that throwback to Eckler on the next to last drive. Seems like they did a much better job of getting people open. Maybe Noah Brown had something to do with it, or maybe it was just not as good a secondary as the one they faced last week. The penalties in the red zone, of course, need to be fixed. But so far, from my perspective, pretty good with Cliff. Brian Robinson Jr., on the list of things that I like. This guy's in for a big season, a career day. Did you see the shot he took at last year's offense? He said it was nice to get the ball 17 times for once, and it was just 17 for 133. His best run was that short yardage break and off to the races. He is a load. Austin Eckler, the shiftiness, the ability to really, with great vision, and by the way, great strength, lower body strength, to make people miss and then to break off of tackles. He is outstanding so far. Their two backs are really the strength, along with the quarterback right now, of the team offensively. Austin Seibert, obviously on the list of things that I liked. What were the odds of 7 field goals in a game? But how about this? What were the odds of 6 of the 7 being chip shot, 33 yards or less? He had 5 field goals in the 4 field goals in the 20s. I mean, that's going to lead us into a red zone conversation, of course, when we get to the bad things from the game. But off the street and into the record books for Seibert, none of the kicks were stressful at all. And pretty much all of them split the uprights. Pretty good operation. Kudos and credit to Larry Izzo, the special teams coach, Tyler Ott, the long snapper, Tress Way, the holder. You know, everything was super smooth. Let's hope it stays that way. You know, he was 45 of 56 on field goals in his career heading into yesterday. That was not the problem. The problem for him was PATs, extra points. He missed 6 in 17 games with Cleveland, the team that drafted him. He hasn't missed one yet here. Of course, he hasn't attempted one either. For those wondering, he was one short of the NFL record held by Rob Baronis for the Titans back in 2007. He joined 9 other kickers in the history of the game who have had 7 in one game. One other quick thing on Seibert. He had 7 kickoffs. 6 of them were returned. I don't know if that was the plan or not, But there were six kickoff returns in the game yesterday. I thought Noah Brown was really, really outstanding getting separation in his first game. I thought Ertz was outstanding in the game. Defensively, I'm going to mention two players. Benjamin St. Juice's punch out was a monster play in the game. The Giants were on the move and potentially headed towards a two-score lead. And then Frankie Louvu, he just flies around. He is super athletic. He hits hard. He had that helmet-to-helmet on Neighbors early in the game. But I do like what I've seen from Louvu. But look, the defense, pretty porous for a second straight week. The list of things I didn't like when we come back, few other observations, and then your calls at 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Big Sunday for the Commanders. They get their first win of the season, 21-18 over the division rival New York Giants. A career day for Brian Robinson, 133 yards rushing on 17 carries. A franchise kind of day for Austin Seibert, who hit 7 field goals. That's a new record and accounted for all 21 Commanders' points. Elsewhere in the NFL, Harrison Butker put the Chiefs over the Bengals 26-25 in a thriller between two AFC powerhouses. On Sunday Night Football, C.J. Stroud lifted Houston over Chicago 19-13. Rough evening for Caleb Williams, 2 interceptions and was sacked 7 times for the Bears. 10 days after Isaiah Likely said the loss to the Chiefs would be the Ravens' worst game of the season, Baltimore turned around and lost to the Raiders 26-23. They fall to 0-2 on the season. Major League Baseball, Nats beat the Marlins 4-3. 2 homers for James Wood, 1,426 feet and 1,435 feet. Talk about some power. And that's what's trending.
All right, list of things that I did not like in recapping the game yesterday, because there was a lot that I did like. We're going to get some of this in right now, and then we'll save the rest of it for the next segment, and then I promise we'll get to your calls. But number one on the list of things that I did not like, and by the way, it's kind of close, right, because of the red zone offense, but number one was the defense for a second straight week. Washington's best defense yesterday was its offense, because the offense dominated time of possession and never punted in the football game. So if the offense had not been as productive holding on to the football and moving the football, it may have been a long day, because defensively they really struggled for a second straight week, this time against a team that came in really on the brink of major changes, if not firings. Stopping the run was the biggest offender yesterday, although tackling and coverage weren't very good. And I'll throw in pressure on the quarterback, even worse than last week. I mean, Washington's dead last after 2 weeks in the league in sacks. But the pressure, but the run stopping wasn't there from the jump. Devin Singletary had himself a day. And again, if they had had the ball more, this guy may have rushed for a buck 80. You know, he was 16 for 95 yards, basically, you know, 6 yards per carry. And there were issues with, by the way, Singletary's a good back. He's got good vision. He's got good quick feet in the hole. I think they got issues at defensive end personally, but it wasn't good, you know, in at tackle either, and it wasn't good at linebacker either. Overrunning, gap fits, a lot of that stuff at play. Bottom line is they could not stop the run. The Giants averaged 5.9 yards per carry, and what it did is it made play action really, really effective for Daniel Jones. And he was never truly, you know, during the course of the day in any of those, you know, real long dropback situations. You know, on the opening drive, they did have a 3rd and 12 that he found Neighbors on. But on that drive before the end of the first half, you know, their longest 3rd down was 3rd and 1, you know, 3rd and 2. They just had Washington guessing and had them off balance all day long. And, you know, going into the game, at the end of the first half, Washington had allowed 9 scores on 11 drives. You know, last week was 7 of 8, and the Giants were 2 for 3. And how about that ridiculous end of first half drive? I mean, come on, man. Like, you know, they can't kick a field goal. and they start with a minute 50 to go, and you let them get a touchdown when you know they can't even kick a field goal? Like, Malik Nabers may have been the best player on the field yesterday, and I think we may come back at the end of the year and say that, you know, he and his quarterback in college may battle it out for Offensive Rookie of the Year, although the Giants, I don't know, man, they probably won't have enough success. He's special, though. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare. Whether it was Davis, whether it was Noah Eye, it didn't matter. You know, it was a total mismatch defensively. So impressed with Nabers. Didn't get a chance. I watched a little bit of the Vikings game on the condensed last week, and you could see it, but they just were struggling so much offensively. Some of it was, you know, in sort of, you know, long distance, down in distance and underneath. But good God, is he a special player with extraordinary speed and phenomenal route running ability. And look, he had a drop. He had a drop at the end, and that saved Washington along with the lack of a kicker. But defensively, another porous effort. I thought that there were a couple of players, and I mentioned Frankie Louvu and Benjamin St. Juice's punch out, which was one of the biggest plays of the game. But it's, you know, I said last week, it's 1 week, it's week one, it's a head fake. This is a little bit more concerning because it was against a team that was struggling so much coming in. And yeah. I think going to Cincinnati right now, like the early part of this 2024 season, is that Washington's offense has to be their best defense. They've got to stay on the field, which they have through the first two games for the most part. Yesterday, not punting at all. And that's going to have to be, you know, their best way of defending the opponent. I mean, Joe Burrow this week, Kyler Murray, Marvin Harrison Jr. the next. They've been, you know, they're off to a phenomenal start. Yeah, it's a bit of a concern. There were a couple of other things, obviously, on the list of things that I did not like. I will get to those. But defense for the second straight week, number one, it looks, even though they're totally different player-wise, defensively, I mean, other than John and Duran and St. Juice, right? I'm sure I'm missing somebody that also plays. But they don't look good defensively at all. All right, more when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.